He's an unfortunate color to look so much like a penis.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our guest is the managing director of the Minnesota Fringe Festival, Jeff Larson. He talks to us about his experience with Fringe Festivals and also with Grace Megachurch.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Nick Glover.
Hey, that's me.
And this week we are joined by our fabulous guest, Jeff Larson, who is, I want to make sure I get this right, the artistic director of the Minnesota Fringe Festival. Is that right?
No.
Failed already.
Executive director. Our artistic director is that bingo cage.
The bingo cage is the artistic director.
That's amazing.
You're the executive.
Does it draw a salary?
Yeah. It probably gets paid more than him.
I have to share an office with it, which is enough for both of us.
It has a bigger desk. I don't even know how that happens.
The executive director of the Minnesota Fringe, a job that you've held for, I believe, less than a year at this point.
Since October.
Fantastic.
You have been replacing Robin Gillette, who had been doing the job for how long?
7 years.
7 years. So
you passed the quiz. Good job.
Well, that's right. We wanted to make sure you were who you said you were.
Yes.
Now, so, what is Jeff's favorite color?
I'm ready for that.
So, what does the executive director of the Fringe do? What is your job?
Kind of keep the wheels on the thing, I guess, is a little bit of, you know, it's kind of supervising everyone else. So, it's scheduling, I do our taxes, I do the social media myself, I hire all the people who do fundraising and sponsorship and tech, and I am on stage and doing stuff like this, which is the least familiar bit of it. Just kind of, you know, general management. There's not really a specific exciting thing that I do besides just kind of hold it together.
Wait. So you do social media for the Fringe too?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay, wait. So you don't have to answer this at all, but...
All right.
Did you get to respond to Jeremy Stomberg being an asshole to the Minnesota Fringe Twitter account?
Who's Jeremy Stomberg?
Just some guy we know. It's irrelevant. He's a friend of the show. He's a douche. Don't worry about
it. It's not John Maddening, is it?
Yeah, yeah, it is. Yeah.
That was me, and I should have just blocked him right away. Like, there were so many points in that conversation, I should have just blocked him.
Wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Jeremy. Hear that,
so,
Jeremy?
So, yeah, hi, Jeremy.
He should have, friend of the show, Jeremy Stomberg.
He's a noted troll.
That's his sport.
It wasn't the worst thing I've ever had to do.
That's not you. That's all him.
So
was mad.
Fantastic.
And what I wanted to tell, we've talked about the Minnesota Fringe before. The Minnesota Fringe is a non-juried festival. So when you talk about the cage, I mean, there's literally a cage of balls, of ping pong balls. We were just talking about geeky boners. So
that's why I laughed.
Everything's a dick joke now. I'm sorry, but so there's a cage of ping pong balls. Anybody who applies to be in the Fringe, you basically, if you pay your $25, you get a ping pong ball.
Yep.
And you get put into that cage, yeah, and
much of a chance as someone from the Guthrie if you've been on stage before.
Yeah, if the artistic director of the Guthrie wants to produce a show at the Fringe Festival, they have as much chance as that 15-year-old kid who's like, screw it, I'm going to put on a show. And they've got that same chance, that ping pong ball in the cage.
Yeah, nobody believes that's actually true. Like, I get so many people pulling me aside, like, oh, come on, you can't really.
Are you serious?
All the time. Like, I thought
how
that's where
could
Tim
you
was
possibly rig that?
Yeah,
I mean, they've seen it happen. You can watch it happen live. It's not some clandestine process.
Yeah, they think it's just this line that we're selling that isn't really just, you know, that isn't real.
Some of the balls are heavier, though,
like,
right?
So do those people also doubt the moon landing?
Yeah, it's a conspiracy theory.
Anybody who believes that does know Josh Carson, since he's never actually been picked in the Fringe lottery.
Maybe they just don't know how much I hate him.
That's it. No. They know about Josh Carson. They think that just proves the point.
All right, good point. So, but that's one way to do the Fringe, and you've been going to a lot of other Fringe festivals, and I'm just kind of wondering, you know, what are the differences? Is the difference the personality of the people who decided to start the Fringe Festival?
I think they're informed a lot by the city that they live in. Mm-hmm. And also, there's a few different kind of standard Fringe models. There's ours, which is unjuried, and we rent the venue. So we basically you know, provide everything for the artists. There is unjuried open access, which Edinburgh Fringe and the Hollywood Fringe are, which the organization does not provide the venues. The artists get in as many artists as want to can be in the Fringe, and they find their own venues.
Oh,
that's how you end up with a festival like Edinburgh, which has over 3,000 shows and something like 600 venues
that's
this year.
Crazy.
And then there are a few festivals that are juried. Like Fringe NYC is a really big juried festival. And like Cincinnati is a half juried and half lottery festival.
Interesting.
And the juried, the festival provides the venues then.
Yes.
Typically.
Yeah, they're like us except for being juried.
Huh. So juried, they would actually, do they jury the proposal or do they look at the producer and say, well, I think this person can produce good work? Is it both?
It's not, it's never about producing good work, actually. It's about, in New York.
Well, thank goodness for that.
Yeah, I know. There's still Fringe Festival. in New York, it's about making sure they want to keep it from turning into a commercial tryout zone. So they try to keep like the super high budget commercial shows out. And they also try to... They, 1 year, she got, like, 6 I Ken Has Cheeseburger musicals.
Oh,
so she cut
boy.
Stuff out like that. They've got, you know, something like 800 submissions every year for, you know, about 200 slots. Huh. And in Cincinnati, they jury half of it to keep it so that... To keep new shows coming in, so it's not the same groups coming into the city every year.
Sure.
And that, so it's not so much about quality, it's just about variation.
Yeah. Well, and the variation at the Minnesota Fringe, because it is totally random, is pretty remarkable. But and I'll talk about being a producer and how things kind of work a little bit, and I won't let you say anything because you can't provide any opinions. But how many people, do you remember how many people put in for a slot this year?
It was about 470.
And we have how many slots available?
169.
Oh, so wow. Almost three times as many. So that means, you know, you put a ping pong ball in the cage and you got a 1 in 3 chance, essentially.
But a lot of people drop out, right?
And lot of people drop out.
Because I know I've got people, I know friends who were, you know, 30 down on the waiting list who are getting called up, you know, when it gets to be close like this.
That's been my experience as a producer, is if you are within, so if it's 169 and if you're within the first 200 numbers drawn, if you want to produce a show, you'll produce a show.
Yeah, you should get in rehearsals if you're in the top 200.
Wow. If you're in the top 200, you should just...
Really interesting.
Yeah, you should just assume the show's going to happen.
That's frustrating. I mean, like, to not know... Well, okay, wait. If you do make it, if you get picked, do you know your venue and your times, like, right off the bat?
Not right away. The first thing that happens is we send you a questionnaire asking for more information about your show. Like, what kind of venue do you want?
Yeah. Okay. Big thing. How small many people can draw.
And then
like
you get a mailing. It's about within about a month of the lottery. You get a mailing and it tells you your venue and your dates and your times. So you know fairly quickly where you're performing and when you're performing.
But if you were like 173, you can assume you're going to get a show at that point. Like 180, let's say. You would just kind of continue on as if you were going to be picked, knowing that you're going to be picked. But not knowing necessarily, like, the when and where.
Yeah, if you're 180, you're probably going to know within, let's see, I think last year I was within, like, 7 on the way. I was, like, 7th on the waiting list.
Uh-huh.
And I got an email within a week.
Okay.
Because in that first period of time, and Jeff would probably know the numbers better than I would, but I would speculate, in that first week to 2 weeks, probably somewhere between 10 and 20 companies.
And that's, like, a part of the fun. That's a part of the challenge and the wackiness.
Well, yeah, there's a really low investment in having an idea and applying.
Sure.
And then once you actually get in and you find, oh, now I have to do this, there's a little bit of a call that happens right after the lottery.
Right, because there's no penalty for withdrawing.
Right.
Is there ever a penalty for withdrawing?
Well, there,
because I know that we've done shows that filled in, like, literally
I've done a show that filled in, like, 2 weeks before the festival started,
The only penalty to dropping out late is at some point you've paid your producing fee, and at some point you don't get that back.
Mm-hmm.
And we want people to stick in and do their show. There's that kind of, like, last-minute jitters. No, you can do this. Seriously, you can. And we try to keep them in, and it's just another incentive.
Sure.
Yeah. So the producer fee is it $350 for a small venue? I've never done a small venue.
Yeah, it's $350 or $450.
Okay, yeah. So it's $350 for a small venue, $450 for a large venue. So once you get picked, you have to pay that producer fee.
Okay.
And then, that's non-refundable, but what does that pay?
It's refundable for a while, and then it becomes non-refundable.
Sure, okay.
Yeah, so.
But, I mean, that covers
your... That sounds
your,
super lenient. Like, that sounds generous, you know?
Very
what I mean?
Much.
That covers your
I'm
venue.
I'm going to write that down.
it covers your venue, it covers your tech, it covers a lot of marketing.
They're
marketing all the shows, but...
Because... Okay, just for example, like to compare it to something else where it's like a big organized event where people are, you have a lot of individual people putting in like an initial chunk of change that might not be as huge or whatever, but like Molly is a long distance runner. If she puts like $100 in to go run a marathon and that marathon gets canceled because of weather or because mm-hmm. they deem it unsafe for whatever reason, she doesn't get to run. And she doesn't get a refund. You get nothing. You're like, it's just like, thank you for your money, and...
And you know that when you sign up.
And you know that you sign up knowing that. Like, to know that you could get as far as paying your producer fee and still, like, have time to get a refund.
Yeah.
That's generous
to me.
Generous. Like, right off the bat.
Well, we'll fix that for next year.
everyone ruined by Nick Glover.
Right.
I've always said to anybody in the theater scene that if you want to produce a new show and you're not willing to pay that $25 to put a ping pong ball in the cage, I feel like you failed at doing the least you can do.
Right?
To get a show produced. Because you don't have to try and find a venue for yourself. You don't even have to write the show yet. You just have to put $25 in the cage. So that's...
You don't even have to write the show. You can get the producing slot and be like, hey, so I got a producing slot and I want to help and maybe direct something. Does anyone have a script? Like, you don't even, I mean, that's the thing is it's your slot. You can do whatever you want with it. It's so great.
Sure.
I don't know. I think it's really cool.
And so your responsibility is to try and wrangle all the herd the sheep, I think is probably you.
It's not a phrase I would use, but yeah,
herd the ferrets,
herd the cats. You
gotta teach the ferrets to dance.
Your job is to basically enable the art to happen.
Yeah, we're you know, my job is logistics. You know, mm-hmm. we you know, it's not really an you know, I'm not an artist, at least in the context of this job, and it's just but it's so much fun to make this huge, complicated machine work.
Yeah.
And that is kind of the way we all think of it in the office, is just like there's so many of these moving parts and it's really satisfying to just kind of force it into shape and, mm-hmm. and make it work. So, yeah, that's the whole job.
And then
make people come to it.
Well, yeah. You used to run the technicians, didn't you, before?
I started in 99. Mm-hmm. I was a technician for 2 years. Then I was the tech director for a few years after that. I forget how many. And... then Robin was hired, and Robin, after her first year, needed someone to do some, like, marketing and corporate sponsorship stuff. And she found out that I had a marketing degree that I've never used.
Ah.
And I was sort of a marketing hobbyist. I like it. I just didn't want to have a corporate job. She's like, oh, well, I'll make
Perfect.
This weird combination job for you that's half admin marketing and half tech.
Nice.
And so I did that up until just, you know, a year ago, and they told me I got the executive director job.
That's fantastic.
Which is great. And working the tech part of Fringe, and I understand this because, I mean, I have a degree in technical theater. So for me, looking at all the moving pieces that you've got, you know, two technicians that work in each venue, and... they are responsible for, is it 10 or 11 shows?
11.
It's 11 shows. So they've got to know how to run. They both have to know how to run 11 shows. They get one tech rehearsal.
Jeez.
Wherein they might be lucky. They're lucky if they can get two run-throughs
Jesus
of the
Christ.
Show.
So it's in your best interest as a director to keep it simple.
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons, and to bring a stage manager is the other thing.
Oh, okay.
But it's a terrifying job.
It is, yeah.
It's really scary what they do.
It sounds terrifying.
Yeah.
And they do, the technicians that the Fringe has are fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't say that lightly. Again, I know what I'm talking about. It's just the thought of how much they have to keep in their heads and how many different shows that they're going to be running. And it's not like it's in a set order. It's not like, oh, I'm going to do this show and then this show and then this show and then this show and it's the same every day. Because it gets flipped all around. And you might do the same show 3 days in a row and then not do that show for a week.
So they'll never get in a habit. They'll never get into a routine.
Yeah.
They'll never... It would require a lot of attention.
And I mean, was it hard work to find technicians to do that, or is that something that they were lining up to do?
They line up to do it. They yeah. love it. It is hard. It's really crazy making, and especially there are a few technicians who work alone in a venue and run the whole 11 days.
Yeah.
And for them, they're losing their minds by the end of it. But this is just as much like summer camp for them as it is for all the actors yeah. in town and producers. And they love the hell of it, and they're out drinking every night with everyone. And it's really like that terror in the adrenaline that comes with it is, you know, it's addicting. It is uh-huh. it's fun.
Is it like paid at all?
Is it
paid like reasonably, or is it more like, because like we work at Renaissance Festival, obviously we get paid. Like I wouldn't, but that's paid the thing. That's not the point.
We get compensated,
but that's not the point. I imagine yeah. it sounds like it's similar for a lot of the technicians. Or
no, I wouldn't say that. I think that we pride ourselves in paying everyone fairly, and that's, the technicians awesome. That we hire are coming out of the Guthrie and the Walker and the Children's Theater, a lot of the professional theaters in town, mm-hmm. and you know I have to pay them to not do those jobs. It's they're not getting paid as much here as they are at Guthrie. It's not a union gig, but I'm, you know, they're getting paid for their
well, so that's so awesome. Often in order to do arts of one kind or another professionally, you need to make a sacrifice, or an organization has to make a sacrifice, and they're not always able to pay people well, so it's especially awesome it's really that nice. You guys can
yeah
because yeah. a lot of places can't. Because just by the nature of, you know, enabling people to make art.
I think the yeah. great thing about The Fringe is it reduces the kind of sacrifice that you have to make as a producer. I mean, yes, you're going to have to sacrifice time to write the show. But the risk of losing money is slim. And the risk of finding an audience is slim. The Fringe helps you do those things. Again, also, they've got top-notch techs. So even though you tend to try to shy away from doing a really technically complex show, you know that if you really don't have a choice, you've got people that can mm-hmm. make that show happen. And it's a great experience. I just keep saying, if you want to produce theater in the Twin Cities and you're not trying to produce a Fringe show, then you're kind of doing theater in the Twin Cities wrong.
But, you're here.
What?
You're here.
You're here. Yes. Well, you
so,
know.
So the technical theater background, I think, is a good segue. It came up in the email oh, yeah. when we were talking
oh,
about.
Right.
We were talking about this. I don't know, Tim. You probably remember it better.
Well, we went to Grace Church for our 100th episode not too right. long ago, and Jeff, when we were talking about what we were going to talk about in the episode, mentioned that he actually did the installation or assisted with the installation at Grace.
The tech installation, right?
Yeah. yeah.
The
specific part of it.
Which yeah. Oh.
It was the ridiculous. Now, I never knew if this thing ended up working, so it might not have. It was so complicated. They have a dancing curtain there.
Really?
The main curtain that wraps around. So there's that semicircular stage.
Yep.
Yeah.
yeah.
And there's a curtain that wraps around, and then it's probably, what, 50, 60
there's
feet tall.
There's a curtain that wraps around that it's fucking huge. Stage.
It wraps around the whole thing, and it's automated in many, many different directions. So it's opening and closing along the track is automated, but also yeah. it has cables that run through it vertically that can open in tons of different ways.
Oh,
all,
shit.
All computer controlled. Yeah. And it has diagonal cables in it, so it can open in this kind
so
of like diagonal fashion.
It can do like a dramatic pull. It can do a straight up and down.
Yeah, and it can do kind like of the, waves and
yeah,
stuff,
like
any
like
sort of
this
computer control thing that
like God's Majesty, but really like exactly. really super technologically advanced curtain.
Yeah, God's incredibly expensive and,
yeah.
and unproven technological
yeah.
state. Yeah,
it was well, it's kind of a gamble. Like it wasn't really a sure
this
thing.
I think this was the first one that was installed in the country and was so we walked out of there having done the mechanical installation of the thing before the controls were set up.
Oh my God.
Really not believing it was going to work.
So not having faith.
So yeah. yeah, it's a kind of place where other people have faith. Yeah. This is like 7 or 8 years ago, and this was, I mean, you have to remember, like, theatrical drapes, especially ones that tall, are insanely heavy.
They are.
So, like, the sizes of the motors to run this thing, Jesus. Too, were just, like, it was a crazy install. And, yeah, it was doomed. I can't imagine it works very well.
Oh my God.
The thing that made me so angry about that, being a person in theater, is going to this church and going, they've got all this money to do this kind of tech, and as a theatrical producer,
yeah.
you know, I'm lucky if I've got $200 to
yeah.
to pay for a set.
Yeah.
and I'm just like, why is this money going here?
That for this.
Yeah, for this.
Like, if it was going there, at least they could be instead spending it on the food poor. For someone that needs yeah. food or vaccinations yeah. or something. Like,
did any part of that place give you the feeling that they cared about the poor at all, though?
Right? No, right. Lots of photos and lip service sure did.
I'm pretty sure they're a prosperity gospel church. Well, they were only there for 1 week, so I don't know. Maybe
they rented
not.
Out for meeting space and for graduations. And stuff like that, and I mean, Molly yeah. and I have to vote there.
We should do the Fringe there.
It's
where's my theater's in Eden Prairie.
I would come up with a show to produce yeah, there that would make them unhappy. So back to differences between fringes. The Edinburgh Fringe. I was in Edinburgh when the Fringe was happening once in my life, and I went to one show. While I was there, and I don't even know how big it was because this is back when I was in college, so a long time ago. You're like, Molly's like, Tim's old.
He's old. Yeah.
And have you? I think you went to the Edinburgh Fringe. Was it last year? The year before?
2012. I went to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they organized this. I think they've been doing it since too. But there was the first World Fringe Congress there.
Oh.
And they invited Robin and I out. Robin was on a panel for something, and they this gets more hilarious with your passing day. But they invited me out to teach a thing on social media.
Oh yeah.
To other awesome. Fringes. So that was, yeah, it was odd.
Did you talk about your experience with John Manning? No,
yeah, it was before that.
So you're yeah, all
that
like,
was when I still thought I knew what I was doing.
Yeah, social media is great. It's awesome. All the yeah. people on the internet are so nice. Right. Like, fast forward 6 months, you're like, oh, it's a bunch of assholes.
These
fuck
guys.
So they did this Congress.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, and then we stayed out there for the Fringe for a week, and it's nuts. And it's so amazing there because you see, you know, and you've done our Fringe a bunch of times, and uh-huh. there's little trends that you can spot happening inside of our festival that you go to Edinburgh and you can see all of those things have blown up and reached their logical conclusion.
Oh, wow.
You know, and it's really, it's very interesting to watch. And it's now I can kind of use it as a cautionary tale in some ways to like, oh, okay, I don't want that thing to happen. And because within that fringe, what's happened is that some groups and actually Fearless Comedy would be the prototype of one of these. Imagine if Fearless Comedy became an enormous corporation mm. and started producing basically its own festival within the Fringe.
So they've got like three or four venues where they're just producing shows for the entire...
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and to some extent, like you can go to one of those and not realize that you're in... that you're not actually at the Fringe Festival anymore. It looks just like the Fringe. The shows are programmed the same way, but
sure.
it's not the Fringe.
No money is going to the Fringe
right.
organization.
They're a barnacle yeah. on the ship. Like, they're just there for the... I mean, they're on the same ride, same destination.
Well, and, you know, barnacle's probably more negative than it turns okay. out, but then there's this infighting, and they have wars. They just, like, you know...
Theater people infighting?
Yeah,
what?
Weird. So... Yeah, it's there's a lot of money floating around there, and you can see how it's kind of distorted things. You know,
yeah,
the BBC is there recruiting all the time too.
Oh, wow. Sure, I bet.
Yeah. So, and the thing that's nice about the Minnesota Fringe that is all these people in the Twin Cities area, and there's so many theater producers in the Twin Cities area, and for 2 weeks a year, everybody just comes together and they all make theater together, and they all hang out and they all talk about each other's shows, and it feels like you're all working towards the same goal for 2 weeks a year before you got to go out and there's that wonderful cross-pollination of being able to talk to somebody who produces something that is totally different than what you produce. And getting a... Because to me, you know, I talk about writing anything but comedy is alien to me. I don't even get it. I don't understand how you can write something serious. It seems so boring and stupid to me. But there are plenty of people that do it exceptionally well, and being able to talk to those people and understand well how do you get yourself
yeah
how do
there's
you
there's people
that?
That only do drama. I mean, there's people
yeah.
that only do
yeah
and there are people that are in between, but
neither make, funny nor interesting,
neither funny nor interesting. But you forge those relationships.
I'm also not commenting on
that. Yes, yeah, Jeff must remain neutral in all things. That's fair.
You can't publicly talk about like a favorite show or least favorite show or anything like
that. From a past Fringe, could you talk about a favorite show from a past Fringe? Or
I will talk about one.
All right.
You know, in general, our philosophy is that the staff, we have audience reviews on the Fringe website. The staff is not allowed to do reviews.
We're the same with Fringe, games. Yeah.
Yeah, and the Fringe is uncensored and unjuried, and it's important to us to not that there will never be an official like best of the Fringe. We don't give awards. We don't say that one show is better than another. That said, I think my favorite show of the Fringe of the last 15 years that I've worked on it is something called Butterfly Kisses. I'll be very surprised if any of you saw it.
I don't know the name.
And I won't describe it too much, but I'll tell you that it's my favorite because I don't know if it's the best or worst show.
And
it's exactly what the Fringe is about. I mean, it was this newlywed couple that was this like kind of a sketch comedy-ish show where the guy dressed up as a tampon and sang a song called Strawberry Dipstick. And he laid on a bed of nails and apologized for masturbating into the towels, and then like she was hitting him with a sledgehammer. It was a lot going on. It was insane. And that is the thing that really, it was like 7 years ago, and it totally sticks with me. I will not forget that show.
It was a very fringe show.
Yes,
it sounds
exactly.
like it.
Yeah.
I love
that was amazing.
I love the democratic nature of it. It's like anybody can produce a show.
It makes me want to write a show that I will just call like the worst show you'll see this year, and then I will just find a way.
We've already had
that show. Joseph Scrimshaw did a show called "The Worst Show at the Fringe."
I'm a comedic genius.
Yeah,
right,
you're brilliant.
Right. I have smart ideas.
Or just a bad memory.
Okay.
there is. And again, I know Jeff can't talk about this, but there is, I always want to see the worst show at the Fringe that year.
I do too.
You know, because it's somebody who, I mean, even if they're just completely incompetent, holy shit, they did it, man.
Yeah.
You go, but B, you can learn so much from when somebody does something wrong and go, holy crap, that was a really bad decision. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that I know no one ever to make it.
But like B movies are enjoyable, like really bad. I mean, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre or like Toxic Avenger or something. I mean, like there are people that like things specifically for their camp or different types of, mm-hmm. of values. I mean,
it's that appeal, and I think the Fringe is not about going to see a show and then just going home. I think the best shows at the Fringe are the ones that give you something to talk about at the bar afterwards.
Yeah.
So you go and you see something great, you want to talk about it the rest of the week. You see something terrible, you want to tell you have to see
this. Yeah, yeah.
But it's like what you don't want in the Fringe is a show that's okay. And that's just kind of a, you know, like, oh, I got nothing to say about that.
It's, yeah. Yeah, that's death. Death by okay. You want to be
Death
great. You want to be great, or you want to be awful, or at least you want to give them something to go.
Yeah,
to
fully
talk
commit
about.
Either way. And
yeah,
you've got
yeah,
an amazing
yeah.
show. So I enjoy the democracy of the Fringe in that there are plenty of first time producers, and there have been shows that I've seen that Fartosaurus Rex. I can talk about it, which was a show that I saw like 3 years ago, which was absolute garbage. And if you listen to our
Weird.
Show and. If you listen,
it's called Fartosaurus Rex.
Yeah, no, they could win me over with that.
It could have. Believe me, there is a good show called Fartosaurus Rex that could exist. This was not it. No part of it was good. None of it. I mean, the fact is, the show was 30 minutes long, which is really kind of a bad thing for Fringe. If you're doing a 30 minute show in a 1 hour slot, you're kind of ripping people off. You ought to be doing at least 45 minutes, and so a 30 minute show, that's bad enough. And the fact that it felt so much longer than that.
Well, and they engaged in some staff or like festival community trolling in that show too, because the dinosaur. We had Wobbles, the Fringe Kitty, as our mascot.
Yeah.
And they had a doll of Wobbles that got its head ripped off very bloodily in the show.
Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we still have that. We took it from them, and their show closed, and we have it in the office.
Wow. Yeah. It didn't work. There was no level. There was no point in that show that worked. There were farts.
And
but the farts didn't work. It was not false advertising. Yeah. I will give it that.
Yeah.
There was a dinosaur and it farted.
Yeah, all right.
They're successful on at least two levels.
I think that's hit all the points there.
Yeah, that's mission accomplished. I mean,
the question for Tim is, why did you see it?
I saw it for a couple of reasons. One, that year I was doing a kids show, and there was a kids. They were still doing Kids Fringe, so there were like 10 shows that got in under Kids Fringe, and I felt like I wanted to support the other people that got in under Kids Fringe, because that was a really challenging. When you were in that, it was really challenging to get people to come see your show.
Was Fartosaurus Rex a kids?
Yes, it was a kids show.
Which you think is a serious adult drama?
Yeah.
Well, no, but we used to play a game called Actual Fringe Title or Not, and it was not always an easy guess. Like
Knowing
that it's a kids show makes me want to see it more, not less.
And you look at the name and you're like, well, this could work as a kids show, and it's got puppets, and I took my kids and they were bored.
How hard is it to make kids laugh with farts and dinosaurs? Yeah,
right?
So, that's a downhill battle.
Especially two small boys.
So reason number one was I was trying to support the other kids, other producers that were doing kids shows at the Fringe. And reason number two was that was the day we could bring the kids to the Fringe Festival. And at that time slot, that was really the only show that was an option for them to see.
And now your kids hate theater.
that's pretty much what happened. I've had great experiences with Fringe with my kids. 2-3 years ago, Four Humors did a show called Stories from the Wayside. Stories from the Wayside School, which I went and saw, and I really enjoyed it. And I was writing a review, and I played their little trailer online. And Alex heard the trailer playing, and he's like, that's Stories from the Wayside School. I'm like, what? You know this book? He's like, oh, yeah, I've read it. I love it.
Huh.
And so then I took him to see that show, and he really enjoyed that show. So I've had good experiences with getting the kids into theater through the Fringe, but you kind of have to find the right shows. Fartosaurus Rex, not the show.
Not Fartosaurus Rex.
So anyway, we've talked a lot about Fringe, but we need to get to the five questions portion of the show.
Let's do.
Jeff, you have studied the five questions thoroughly, I assume.
I've forgotten half of them already, but yeah.
You're perfect.
All right.
All right. So.
Question number one, what's the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days?
I don't have time a lot during the summer, but I did see Tim Vermeer last night. Which is Penn and Teller made a documentary about a friend of theirs who's trying to figure out how Vermeer made his realistic paintings.
Right.
Pretty decent. I guess it's tied between that and Godzilla for best movie in the last 30 days.
Nice. I haven't seen Godzilla.
I thought it was great.
It was pretty,
I want to see it.
Tim Vermeer, is that
Tim's
the name?
Tim's Vermeer. Yeah.
Is that on Netflix, maybe? Or
maybe that's not how I got it. But, okay. It's out there.
Okay, it's out there.
Excellent.
It's fine.
We'll get some more information.
Yeah, I would like to hear about that, because I know that Vermeer has very specific painting methods that are, because the Dutch masters do a lot of layering and other weird stuff. So
yeah, and there's the trick that this guy has as a theory of how Vermeer did it is insane, and it involves like just crazy lenses and mirrors.
I might have heard about this guy on NPR. Yeah, yeah. All right, sounds awesome. Yeah.
Approaching it like a. The way they do with magic and performance. They're like deconstructs. They're going to figure out that other magician's trick.
Yeah.
Like, that's their take on the... That's fun.
Yeah.
That
sounds...
Question number two is, who is your favorite atheist character?
Jack Reacher.
Ooh. Oh.
Yes. I during the summer, it's both escapist movies and escapist fiction for me, just to keep my head from exploding from the job. And I've torn through those books in the between last summer and this summer. He is an avowed atheist. I went back and
I should
looked
read
up
those.
Books.
The Tom Cruise movie was based on.
Yeah,
the Tom the Tom Cruise movie Jack Reacher was based on. Yeah,
and
the guy in the book is like book. Six.
He's huge.
He's like 6'4" or something like that.
Yeah.
He's
also like twice the height of Tom Cruise.
He's of abnormally large build. It's remarked frequently during action scenes, like his huge frame chugging like a freight train, like fucking like.
I still like that movie.
I haven't seen it. I wanted to read it.
Would you say read the books and then watch the movie, or watch the movie and then read the books?
I would say they have so little to do with each other, as long as you don't read the book that movie is based on. Uh-huh. There's like 16 or 17 books.
So you don't need to read them in any order?
Yeah, the book is called One Shot that movie is based on. I don't think you need to read them in order. They're episodic.
Cool. So.
Yeah, I saw the movie. I think it's interesting. It's Anyway, it's on Netflix.
It's kind of like outdated, like hyper-competent protagonist. Oh, that, you know, just like kicking everyone's ass. Like, this kind of movie was made in the 80s and not so much now.
Yeah.
Do you read any cyberpunk at all or anything like that?
I love Neal Stephenson, but that's kind of all
okay.
I've done.
Richard K. Morgan, Takashi Kovacs books. Have you heard of those?
I think my wife has read them.
Holy shit, they're so good. And, like, everything I've read about... I haven't read the Jack Reacher books, but everything I read about them, what you're saying, like, the kind of a Mary Sue protagonist who's, like, good at everything, like, Takashi Kovacs of the Envoy Corps. Like, he's just... Sort of like good and everything.
Recently, Mary Sue.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah. You might like them.
All right.
They're really good.
The thing I'll say about the movie is it's kind of like somebody watched The Bourne Identity and said, let's make The Bourne Identity with Tom Cruise.
Sure.
No part of that sounds bad to me. But.
Question number three is, what is your geekiest hobby?
I have a lot, but probably... Like, the thing that's, like, not a geeky hobby in the world, but is in the world I live in, is I'm very much into cars.
Ooh, and that's a good geeky
I grew
one.
Up in that, and then recently got back into it. I actually drive an old car as my daily driver during the summer, and just, I'm just, like, keep up with automotive design and news, and I'm just, like, really...
Do you actually, like, do car repairs yourself?
Yeah.
What are you excited about the Tesla?
Yes. Yeah. Those are that whole electric thing and the way they deliver power is really like you shouldn't get me talking.
No. I wish we could convey the delight on your face like over the radio. It's awesome.
I'm super not a car person, and I read about Tesla cars, and I'm just like they hit my like technology like
engineering
nerd, engineering boner like.
Yeah, it's like every kind of nerd can converge on the right thing. And
who can't love his car?
Luddite nerds.
Well,
they don't love anything.
Tesla's the one that's like doing open technology, right?
As of this week.
Yeah. And I mean, it's brilliant because imagine how much money they're going to save not defending those patents. Mm-hmm. Like, and the increased user base for the technology. Like, it's just like it's such a win-win. It's fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Elon Musk, Tony Stark, dude. Yeah. It's so awesome.
Yeah, it's for real.
Oh, question number four. What is your favorite sandwich?
The Adult Club at Caffrey's in Uptown.
Caffrey's.
It's an amazing sandwich. It's not like, I don't think it's like not just my favorite sandwich. It might be just one of my favorite things in the world.
What is
it? Adult Club.
Adult Club. Chicken salad, bacon, lettuce, tomato. Some of the best bread anywhere.
Ooh.
And it's just like, it is a fringe treat for me. I'm rarely in Uptown, but I go there. Like, I'll get it like four times in 11 minutes. It's just really, I love that place.
So if you have a show in Uptown during the fringe, you've got a better chance of executive director Jeff Larson watching the show because he'll be closer to his favorite sandwich.
Just you have a good chance of me taking up a parking spot, a huge
sandwich. Fuck your audience. I need my sandwiches.
Right across the street from Huge. Those guys, Cavalry's a staple of my like D&D group. Like, we would order from there all the time.
Have you ever had that sandwich?
Pork.
Oh, bacon. Yeah.
And I've never had anything but that sandwich. It was the first thing I had there, and I haven't been able to order anything since.
That happens
to me. You'll go to a restaurant, and you'll have something so good, you'll be like, well, I could order something else on the menu, but why?
It's same for me, but Reuben. So I just got a Reuben there, and why would I get anything but that Reuben? It's really good.
Question number five is, what is the stupidest thing anyone's ever said to you about your atheism
or agnosticism? We haven't talked about whether you're atheist or agnostic.
I don't think I have one, because I think I live in a world where it's just, like, Twin Cities Theater is so liberal that, like, it's sort of expected that, like, nobody brings it up, because, like, of course you don't believe in God. Like, religious would be so strange in this, you know, so I don't have anything, and I don't walk around saying, like, it seems strange to, like, talk about what I don't believe in, so I don't bring it up very often. It's more like, you know, it's like, I love science, like, you know, it's like, talk about science all day, so I've had tons of amazingly stupid anti-scientific things said to me.
We'd love to hear that.
Yeah.
I think the worst, and I hope I'm not killing the mood here, but a couple of years ago my dad was dying of cancer, and it was probably the day before he died. He's in the hospital. We went back to the house for a little while, and my uncle said to me, you know, it's like, you know, you must know that they've had the cure for cancer for decades, and they've just been keeping it from us to make money. And, you know, so he was making this accusation that, like, the hospital was murdering my dad.
Yeah.
Like, you know, which is both you know, crazy and
super crazy,
you know, and just rude on top of it.
Yeah.
So that was probably that's a real standout of you know, just anti-scientific bullshit that, you know, we argued about it all night, and then I feel terrible. I mean, this happened 2 years ago, and this is the only time in my life I feel bad about apologizing, because I actually said to him, "That's the stupidest thing anyone's ever said to me." And then the next day, I'm like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that." Like, no,
you really should have.
It's like totally true.
Yeah.
But also, like, to some degree, he's entitled to his stupid wrong belief, but, like, that's a perfect example of keeping your fucking stupid little opinion to yourself.
Yeah,
like,
that's really bad timing.
It's less than helpful. It's,
well, it was just patronizing, too. He was just, absolutely. You have to know.
You have to know. You seem like a smart guy. I don't tell you.
That's exactly the tone.
My mom had some guy that on a date once, like, all of a sudden start 9/11 truthing on her. And he was like, he was like, you know, well, as you know, you can't even trust the footage that they have up there. And she's like, well, right, because I mean, it's obviously been doctored. Well, why wouldn't they do that? And he goes, "Yeah, I can tell you're smart. I can tell you're smart."
He said, "The Bush's company inserted micro explosives,
thermite
plastics into the building material, so the building itself had explosives in it when the Bush's company helped build it, like way back in the 70s or 80s, and the 70s." And she goes, "You know, the building was built in like 76, and those plastics weren't invented until like 82.
And he goes, "Exactly." That was his. Like, he was like, "You, we think alike. I like you. You're smart.
You're smart. You understand.
Wow. Oh my God.
You get it." Yeah, anti-science. That,
save us from the assholes.
I've gotten into a few arguments with anti-vaxxers online lately because they
piss me off. Yeah, I've watched you do that. Like, what's the point?
Because they piss me off, and I don't know. I know I can't change their mind, but they make
collective
me,
mind.
They make me angry for thinking that, and so I need to express my anger directly at them.
You can't shoot them. I mean, you're not supposed to. Apparently,
I guess.
I mean, you're not supposed to. They obviously don't care if you do. No one's changing anything.
There might be a season on him someday, and if there is, I will learn how to fire a gun.
Well, there would have to be a cull so we could keep our herd human.
Dear government, can we please cull?
Okay, so Jeff,
I'm gonna be arrested later.
This will be an interesting episode.
Dear FBI, we are kidding.
joke, funny. Okay, Jeff, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure. People want to know more about the Minnesota Fringe Festival, including many of the shows that are happening there. Where would they go look?
Fringefestival.org. And if they want to learn about shows, you have to wait until July 1st when we launch the new website.
And when is the festival proper?
The festival is July 31st through August 10th this year in 19 venues around Minneapolis.
It doesn't overlap with Renaissance Festival.
It does not.
Year.
No, it never overlaps with
it
the Renaissance Festival.
Gen Con is sometimes the problem.
It doesn't overlap. It ends the weekend before the Renaissance Festival, which is why I'm a fucking idiot to do it.
That's why.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of other reasons. But so I have a couple of shows in the Fringe that I will talk about later because I don't want it to seem like Jeff is endorsing my shows.
Right.
That's the last thing I would do.
Exactly. Jeff, if he's going to endorse a show, it won't be one of mine.
Even if he could. Yeah.
Right. But you should check out the website, and I encourage you, if you're an artist, you should definitely try doing a show at the Fringe. Obviously not this year. It's too late. But if you are a fan of theater and you have not tried the Fringe Festival before, I'm just going to encourage you to try it out, because it is really an amazing eclectic experience, and every show is different from every other show. Thanks a lot, Jeff, for joining us. We really appreciate it.
If you
enjoyed our show, please do us the favor of reviewing us on iTunes and talking about how awesome we were. Also,
or how not awesome we are.
Go for it. I want to hear it.
Yeah, bring it. Bring it hard.
But like, lots of stars, though.
Yeah, 5 stars, and then how awful we are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, you can find us on Facebook, like us there, follow us on Twitter. Send us your 5 answers to our 5 questions at 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Adios.
Bye.
Every Fringe director is constantly talking about their balls.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks.
We're geeks.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
We're geeks.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
Geeks without God.
You know what? I rewarded him for trolling by remembering his handle.